Okay, welcome back. Hour number two on this Wednesday. That means tomorrow's Thursday. Almost to Saturday. Oh boy. Now, there is a lot going on with our hour. We're always running into new and fascinating information. This is the Jeff and Erica Hour. If you're new, we do this Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's the only time we really can spend any time together, so we don't want to waste it, and it's fun. And we get to do things that are really important for all of you. And we're going to review some things tonight, and here's some new things that I think will make a difference for all of you, especially any of you who fly or are thinking of flying. If you're thinking of flying, you need to pay very close attention to this hour. Now, that said, the FAA 2 days ago issued a story that it's their opinion that over 5,000 pilots in the U.S. are hiding or are otherwise dealing with known and unknown serious health issues. All right? Now, most of those 5,000, 80-plus percent, are going to be injected. And a certain percentage, a significant percentage, we feel, of the 20% or thereabout that hasn't been injected are already essentially passively injected. They've been shed upon. There has been transmission of the spike to them and mRNA, and they're in trouble. They're percolating trouble. All right, let's see if my partner's there. Are you there?
I am, Jeff. Good evening.
You've been sitting back knitting all day again?
I don't have that skill.
Ah, you New Englanders, you always got the rocker and you got the knitting needles. And
only in winter.
Fine. That's right. Okay. So the issue of flying, I'm trying to remember the last time I flew anywhere, and it's a long time ago. When was the last time we flew anywhere together? It was a long time ago.
Maybe another lifetime.
That's about as far back as I was thinking. It's got to be close to 30 years for me. Seriously.
No.
And I don't know. Pardon?
You've missed out.
Oh, yeah.
Especially right. The last few years.
Flying on Spike Airlines. Spike
right.
Air, a new and more exciting way to get to your destination. I don't know. It's crazy. Before we jump into that, let me do this. Bill Gates is saying, without a direct quote, but he's saying it in fragments, and they're weaving it together in stories. He's warning people that if you resist the coming mRNA tsunami, now this is through the needle and apparently through medication platforms that aren't injections, you will be excluded from society. All right? What does that tell you right there? First thing you think of is, oh, we're going to have some kind of a bio-identifiable ID card that'll be hooked in instantaneously to the national database of who you are, what you are, where you are, and your health background and your vax and medication status. So that's a given. He said they can't wait for this. They're drooling for this. They want this total control. Experimental mRNA jabs are set to replace all of our medications. I don't know if I go quite that far, but certainly most all of them, according to Bill Gates and the globalist elite, who are warning that we will be forced to take hundreds of mRNA jabs every year, if we wish to participate in society. Well, I'll opt out. I mean, I'll tell them right now, I don't want to participate in that kind of society. So,
I think they're dreaming. We already know these things are a massive fail.
They're also a deadly fail.
Well,
so there's that. There's
yes.
that too. However, I don't want to take anything away from the so-called coronavirus vaccine, because I think they've hit the ball out of the park with that one. It is so evil and it is so incredibly sophisticated in what it does to the body that was a big hit for them. But we need to be aware. What we need to do is stop going to doctors. Yeah, you break a leg, okay, I get that. But stop going and asking for trouble. I need, 10 different tests, cost $100,000. And then what do? They give you the same thing you could find out basically online if you do a little research for an hour on what to do. And oftentimes there isn't much to be done. So the point is, they're in the process now of reconfiguring virtually all so-called childhood vaccines into an mRNA format, and they're gonna roll it out. So
yeah, it appears so. This RSV shot, it's not the Pfizer one that's available to the 60-year-old and above, is not mRNA. It's a protein subunit. Again, another one grown in these insect cells, the baculovirus type. Moth, yes. And but I believe Moderna is working on a mRNA version for this RSV virus that used to only be an issue for premature babies and elderly immune compromised people. But now it's spreading because we have so much of the population immune suppressed now. It is a problem.
Right. If you remember last program, I think it was Monday. Melissa Moore? Was that Monday?
Yeah, I think that was last week.
All right. Melissa Moore is Moderna's chief scientific officer. And we had a recording of her at some conference and video. And we played a chunk of it. Here's the story I'm looking at here about Gates warning about the coming mRNA tsunami. And it says, if that isn't disturbing enough, Moderna's chief scientific officer also boasted that Big Pharma will soon be injecting mRNA straight into people's hearts. Yes, she's talking about the same hearts that were healthy until the vaccine rollout caused millions of people all over the world, including fit and healthy young people and elite athletes, to keel over with heart problems. Well, it's bigger than millions. It's hundreds of millions, I'm sure.
And well, we heard Stéphane Bancel talking about that earlier this year, right? That we're going to be able to inject directly into the heart this mRNA
right.
coating
yep.
so that the heart yep. would have the proteins it needs to function normally.
Ha-ha. Uh-huh. Right. They'll
As
give
you wait
the
for
shot.
Your heart transplant.
Yeah, that too. And then they'll probably have the paddles right there after... just in case, so they can charge you more for the injection. And don't worry about the millions of cases of turbo cancer caused by mRNA around the world. Big Pharma has an answer for that, too. That's right, more mRNA. So there you go. I talked to a fellow the other day, and he said he had 5 or 6, I can't remember, people that he personally knows who have developed turbo cancer, and they're gone. Gone.
Yeah, it's real. There is an absolute epidemic of this now. And we are, unfortunately, starting to see it to some extent in the unvaxxed, who are hanging around the vax, forced to work with the vaxxed or live with the vaxxed. We're starting to see it.
We are living in a post-Orwellian world now. Think about it. Up is down, black is white, war is peace. And normalization of what? Drag queens, perversions, pedophilia. It's just another lifestyle. This world is just destroyed. And look how quickly they did it. 3-4 years?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Make no mistake, the global elite are licking their lips about the hundreds of mRNA vaccines in the pipeline. They're getting ready. And here's a quote by former British Prime Minister Blair, boasting that the, quote, slew of new injectables and vaccines will give the World Economic Forum the opportunity to change the world. Yes, indeed, they're going to change the world. It will never be the same. No doubt. All right. So you want to get on a plane and take a flight, okay? Some of you have to because of your work. You've got no choice. There are things that you need to keep in mind, and I would not hesitate to ask the airline of your choice what kind of redundancy they have in the cockpit in terms of the pilot getting sick. Do you have a co-pilot there who's capable of fully executing the responsibilities of being a professional aviator? Do you? Is there another one? Long-distance flights overseas require another pilot to be actually in the passenger section, just, you know, enjoying the flight. They have to have redundancy that way. I don't know about domestic flights here in the continental U.S., but I would ask. Some of these airlines want to go to just one person and up front, one pilot.
Yeah.
And talked about.
And we saw that. I sent you that preview of this new airline, Bermuda Air.
Yeah.
I think this is what the future of the airline industry is going to be, what's left of it, if there's anything left of it. But there are smaller jets that have, what would you call that? What type of seating?
It's one aisle.
One seat. Yeah, one aisle. One seat on each side of the aisle.
Never seen anything like it. Yeah.
With plenty of room, and you've got kind of shelf space in the area where there would be another seat, and then kind of a barrier, so you've got some privacy. And so I think the end of this month, they're going to be offering trips from Boston to Bermuda for, was it $199?
Oh, it's super cheap to get people
in
the planes.
Dangle the carrot.
Yeah.
Give them a taste of this. And then, sometime in November, the price is going to go up to $999.
As in $1,000.
So obviously be out of reach for many people that,
right,
you know, up until now was otherwise affordable.
If you want to see what we're talking about, the airline is called Bermudair. Not Bermuda Air, but just Bermudair. And you'll see they use an Embraer jet, which, I don't know, 40 passenger maybe, something like that. And, I think your point is well taken. This is going to be, it's beginning to morph over to an upper middle class pastime for people flying. It's not cheap anymore, and it's going to be downsized. The number of passengers will be downsized as well. There's just not going to be that many people around in a couple of years.
I distinctly recall, I don't know if it was Boris Johnson or somebody over in the UK, saying a couple of years ago that I think by 2030, maybe sooner, they were intending to close most of the airports.
Correct.
In that country.
That's right. That's already been announced that that's their goal. And I think 2030 is about when it was. Yeah, and they're taxing. The mayor of London is now using cams everywhere, to tax vehicles on distances driven. And the people are not happy about that. Now, if you get in the car and drive 10 miles, you're clocked on a camera, and you're billed.
Wow.
That's what they're doing. And this will all be generated by computer. They'll, you know, get your license plate at one camera and catch it at the next one, and they'll track you, and they'll send you a bill for the distance traveled. I'm sure there'll be a climate angle tied into that. But you polluted the air for 25 miles, so you're going to be taxed on the basis of climate destruction. Like that.
Oh, that's what they're using to justify all this.
Right. Bermudair. All right, just take a look. You'll see it. That's the future of a lot of aviation. These are smaller jets. Interesting. Okay. Here's a fellow, I'm going to let you do the intro on this, named Dr. Kevin Stillwagon, who has a very interesting background, and he is going to talk to us about pilots. Go ahead.
Yeah, probably a lot of people have heard of Kevin, Dr. Kevin Stillwagon. He's a chiropractor now, was a chiropractor many, many years ago, left that profession to become an airline pilot, and was an airline pilot for most of his career. I'm not sure if it was 20 years, a long time, for Delta Airlines, and then left when they started enforcing first the mask mandates, and then I apparently he kind of knew where this was going and didn't want to be a part of it and left and went back to being a chiropractor. And he has been very outspoken about this charade that they've pulled off on people and about right. the dangers of the injections, and very, very good at, I would say, educating the public on what these injections are, how they work, and what to fear and what not to fear. Very pragmatic. And I understand it, he's appeared yes. at a number of, I believe, either city council or school board meetings mm-hmm. testifying to the dangers of these things.
Right.
And the, you know, the nonsensical restrictions that were put in place that was more of a psyop than anything.
Right. All right, here we go. This is Dr. Kevin Stillwagon, a former Delta big jet pilot. He knows what he's talking about. So let's take a listen here. All right. Here we go.
Got this shot that was illegally pushed and mandated into pilots. This should never have happened. There are regulations within the FAA that clearly state that pilots should not have any experimental medications put into them ever. And even after a medication gets full FDA approval, they have to wait a full year before a pilot is allowed to take it. And the reason is because there may be some adverse reactions that happen in the general public now that starts taking that medication that might affect aviation safety, you see. So they have to look for that and be aware of that. So that's called, prevention of a potential problem. And that's what the FAA is supposed to do.
But wow, I never even heard that. That's news
yeah.
to
Exactly.
And it makes sense, and it makes total sense.
It does. Because they're always concerned about safety. And so what happened with this shot was, you know, the FAA came out literally the day after Pfizer got its emergency use authorization approval, which was on December the 11th, on a Friday. Literally the very next day, on a Saturday, the FAA made a statement. Now, they never make statements on weekends, but this time they did. And they said the Pfizer shot is safe and effective, and we recommend that all pilots and people involved in aviation go out and get this shot. So that was directly against all of their immediate guidelines. And, people ask me, well, how did they get away with that? And, well, they got away with it because they said it was a, quote, vaccine, not a medication. But if you really look at the regulations under vaccines, it pretty much says the same thing. It says a vaccine must be FDA approved. Before a pilot is allowed to take it. And, of course, these shots were not FDA approved, and some of them still aren't. So, you know, that's the problem that we're having. Now, here's the thing. It was known before this shot even started going into people's arms that myocarditis was a adverse reaction of special interest. They knew that this was going to happen. They already had data on it, and still they allowed it to go into pilots.
Kevin, before you go on, can you explain what that is? Because I know sometimes people get confused, like, what is myocarditis?
Okay.
I just said it wrong. There you go. Explain what that is so that people know why that is so important for pilots to...
Yeah, well, myocarditis is inflammation of the heart muscle. okay? And endocarditis is an inflammation of the lining of the heart muscle, and pericarditis is inflammation of the sac that surrounds the heart. So it's been known that this shot can cause inflammation of the heart muscle itself, that's myocarditis, and also inflammation of the lining and the sac of the heart. Now, the problem with that is, number one, it can be completely asymptomatic. Pilots can have this problem going on and not even know that it's going on. But the real danger is it interrupts the normal flow of electrical activity in the heart. It can set up these little areas that are called ectopic foci. And basically, you've heard of the pacemaker of the heart, right? It's a node that's in the chamber of the heart, the upper chamber of the heart, that actually directs the controlled rhythm of the heart, how fast it's supposed to beat. Well, with myocarditis, you get all of these little pacemaker areas that start showing up within the heart muscle itself. That interrupts the normal flow of electrical activity. Now, that may not sound bad, but it's hugely bad because when a pilot gets stressed, there is a rush of what's called adrenaline. And this adrenaline will ask the pacemaker of the heart to beat faster because it's like a flight or fight response. But when you've got this problem of myocarditis, what can happen is it can cause the heart to go into what's called atrial or ventricular fibrillation. What's that mean? Well, it means the heart is still beating, but it's not beating in unison. It's basically sitting there twitching, okay? And what happens is the flow of the blood through the heart does not continue, and within a few seconds, you'll lose consciousness because your brain is not going to be able to get the blood and the oxygen. And if the heart is not restarted or, you know, shocked back into proper rhythm with an AED, you know, an automatic external defibrillator, which are required to be on all aircraft now, if that doesn't happen, that person will die. And that's the danger, you see. So any pilot that's diagnosed with myocarditis is not allowed to fly an aircraft of any kind, not even a small Cessna, because of this problem of sudden death that can happen. Now, I will tell you that from August the 14th, which was just a few days ago, August the 14th through August the 17th, we had three pilots in uniform die at work. One of them was actually in command of a Boeing 787, which carries a lot of people. He went up to go to the laboratory and he died. Okay? This is not normal. We also had two other pilots that died while they were at work. One was sitting in the back as a passenger because it was an international flight and you're required to have extra crew members. Well, he was an extra crew member and he passed away. And these are young, healthy pilots. And then we had another one, and this guy was just checking in for his flight at the gate, and he passed out at the gate. They took him to the hospital, and he was dead on arrival. These guys are healthy people, aged anywhere from 40 to 56. You know, pilots are the healthiest people on the planet. We are poked and prodded and, you know, put on treadmills and tested, yada, 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 every 6 months to make sure that we're healthy and fit.
Okay, there you go. Be aware. Forewarned is forearmed. Don't take these things lightly. When I mentioned the 5,000 pilots in the U.S., that of course includes Cessna pilots all the way up the line. It's not just airline pilots. But it's a bad situation. And the heart, when it goes into AFib, or whatever. It just it sits there and just kind of pulses. It does. It's not a four-chamber synchronized beat anymore. It's not a pump. It's just twitching, like you said.
I wonder what they're going to do with these 5,000, did they say, 5,000 pilots that falsify their medical condition?
5,000, that's right.
That are
right.
Still flying at the moment?
That's what they claim.
Will they ground them and or just let them continue flying until something happens?
I don't remember what the story said. I don't think I read the entire story, but it was 5,000, and the FAA is considering something. These people, they say they're hiding their health issues. So that's not good.
Yeah.
Let's extrapolate. Let's just take the, I always like to do this. All right, here we're talking about pilots, 5,000 who have been, in all likelihood, injected. That's the ground rule. When you're injected, you eventually, if not right away, develop serious health problems. What about people who operate not planes, but automobiles?
I know. We had a head-on collision here yesterday, you know, motor vehicle head-on collision.
How did that resolve? Did you hear anything?
I don't know. It was I cannot imagine that there were not any fatalities. I know the area where it happened, and it was... Mm-hmm. Not a divided highway, but it was high speed, probably 50, 55, opposing lanes, and someone probably drifted into the oncoming lane. Now, were they just distracted, or were they having a medical event? Because a couple weeks ago, I heard a call for somebody that was observed going down the interstate, driving very erratically, and the person that called it in was able to, I guess, look into the car and see that this individual was having issues and called it in as such.
Wow.
And I don't know how
observable
that one ended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, 50 miles an hour, two cars opposing.
Yeah, not good.
That's into a solid block wall at 100 miles an hour. Think about it.
Well, and you still see when you're out and about this erratic driving. Either real slow, tends to be one extreme or the other, very, very slow, as if they're having trouble, navigating, or very aggressive.
It's the indecision that female drivers are sort of historically notorious for. That's just, they're not decisive and aggressive. They kind of make mind changes in midstream and whatever. And then men being far too aggressive and going far too fast. This is bad chemistry, bad combinations.
Yeah.
So, yes,
well,
airplanes,
and you can just imagine,
cars, whatever.
I mean, I would say most of these people at this point, if they've been keeping up with these regular boosters, doses, and we know they're still getting them, right? From the phone call we made, was it yesterday?
No, Monday.
These shots are still flying off the shelf.
Well, we call
so they probably
Walgreens.
Feel pretty crummy most of the time.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And they may be impaired in a number of ways.
We called Rite Aid and we called Walgreens and talked to the pharmacy.
Right? Walmart?
Walgreens.
Okay.
It was definitely Walgreens.
Okay.
I should have called Walmart because they're probably doing a higher volume. But the Walgreens alone, 40 a day and up. That's what they said. 40 a day. And you know a lot of these people are going to get right back in line for the new booster.
Yeah, I from what I've seen on some of the talk sites, social media sites, Reddit, for example, there seems to be quite a bit of interest in these things.
That's amazing.
It is. It really is. And, you can tell they're mostly mainstream media disciples.
Right.
And they were quick to chide or shame anyone that, expressed any hesitation. So that hasn't gone away.
We just have to resign ourselves to the reality that the majority of the people, of the sheeple, are going to continue following along what the big flat screen tells them to do.
Yeah.
They just are. That's a surprise to hear that after all these terrible months of ordeal and years, they're talking like that. There's an interest in the new booster. Wow.
I think they're very, very shielded from the carnage.
That must be all you can.
The only thing that would explain it. And did you see? I did send you this story that the CDC has now closed down.
Yes.
The adverse reporting, as if there was any legitimate one anyway, for the COVID-19 shots.
CDC quietly removes COVID-19 vaccine adverse events collection from its website. Don't tell us anything anymore about how 3 of your children and 14 relatives have dropped dead in the last week. We don't want to hear it.
And I guess evidently that was as of June 30th. So that's what, a month, almost 2 months ago now?
Right. Crazy. All right, we're going to jump into our second video here. This is both of these are under our names in guests, so you're certainly welcome and encouraged to go look at these things at your own speed. This one is also by Dr. Kevin Stillwagon. It's called The Basics of Immune Function and the Importance of Innate Immunity. But what it really does, it tells us about... What's the best way to phrase this? I wrote it down. Hold on. Dr. Kevin Stillwagon explains why you should never take a booster shot, ever, and there's a really nice visual presentation with this. That's what I want you to all... Go pull this up now. Look and guess, and it should be the second link there. Dr. Kevin Stillwagon explains why you should never take a booster, ever. It's a really a good visual explanation. And we're going to look at this together and maybe make a comment or two. And I think you'll understand when you look at this why EDTA or MMS, CDS can't go in and detoxify and clean this stuff out like they talk. It's all talk. It's going to detox you. No, there's no detoxing this. It becomes an intrinsic part of your physiology.
Yeah, I still see people thinking that it's a matter of getting out the heavy metals. Well, there's no heavy metals. Oh, I shouldn't say that. There have been heavy metals detected in there in the nanoscale, either by contamination or intent, whatever, they're in there. But that's not new. These nanoparticles of various metals have been in vaccines now for several years.
Right.
But it's so much more than just that. The fact that you have a viable genetic code that can be read and a foreign toxic protein be expressed indefinitely is the big problem.
Okay.
Stop. Did you know thousands of Americans are piggybacking off an IR...
Hold on. Some commercial I have to get rid of. Same
IRS
guy. All right.
Program.
Stop.
Pfizer and
commercials are terrible. All right, you ready, everybody? Get that video queued up. It's the second one in there. It's about eight to 9 minutes long. It's really well done, and it's also titled about explaining what two types of ADE are, but it's more than that. It gives you a really nice, easy graphic handle on liquid nanoparticles. That's what's used to coat the instructions, otherwise known as mRNA, and allowing them to set up shop in the body, in cells, to produce spike protein. So here we go. 3, 2, 1, and go.
Pfizer and Moderna use these things called lipid nanoparticles. They are basically fat bubbles with smaller fat bubbles inside of them. Now, the smaller fat bubbles are self-assembling. They automatically come together because the mRNA is negatively charged, and the lipid shell around them is positively charged. These small lipid shells are man-made, and they're proprietary, and they are also toxic. Pfizer's is called ALC-315, and Moderna's is called SM-102. Inside of the small fat bubbles is the proprietary man-made modified messenger RNA. Pfizer's is called tozinemarin, and Moderna's is called elisomeran. Since they are proprietary, they are different and patented, and they make different shaped spike glycoproteins. That is one reason why the adverse reactions can differ between Pfizer and Moderna, because they are making different proteins. Anyone telling you that they are making the exact same protein is a liar. Then they surround the smaller fat bubbles with a larger fat bubble. This larger fat bubble is made of natural lipids that are normally in your body, and these are called cholesterol and DSPC, which stands for a long and fancy word that's fun to say, disterylphosphatidylcholine. They control the size of this larger fat bubble by using just the right amount of polyethylene glycol. This makes the size of the lipid nanoparticle very suspiciously the exact same size as the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And what is a virus? It is a shell of protein and lipids that contains genetic material that is not alive. Let that sink in. So the size of these smaller lipid nanoparticles is about 10 times smaller than the bigger one. So what happens when these things get injected inside of you? Well, let's take a look at that.
All right, so I think all of you got that. I'll stop just for a moment. It was a large round circular item with lots of smaller circular items within it. And the large item was certainly constructed with the liquid nanoparticle, the LNP covering, which protects the instructions. And the interior, each little round one inside, which had the mRNA instructions in them, was covered and protected as well. So it's like a gift that keeps on giving. All right, now this second image looks like a square, kind of looks like the state of Utah. And what you're looking at on the outside, those are spike proteins. The little black, looks like a black Y with a green microphone in it. Those are spike proteins. The green little round object is a spike. And they go out of the cell and just free float into the bloodstream. They can go into the interstitial fluid as well of the body. That's the fluid between cells in the body. And let's listen here. But it's interesting. I want you to understand that those green oval shapes are spike proteins, all right, which your cell manufactures.
So here is the lipid nanoparticle floating around in your blood. It will merge with and be taken in by just about any cell it bumps into. Now, depending upon the pH of your cell, the lipid nanoparticle either gets transported to the other side of the cell and released into your tissues to become toxic, and that is called transcytosis, or the mRNA gets released into the cytoplasm to be translated into the spike glycoprotein, which is also toxic, and that gets released from the cell back into the blood or your interstitial fluids. All of this is highly variable. You have absolutely no idea how many lipid nanoparticles you will get, where they will go, what cells they merge with, how many spike glycoproteins you will make, nor how long you will make them. So it's a two-pronged toxic attack on you. The lipid nanoparticles themselves are toxic, and so are the spike glycoproteins. So, how does your immune system react to these spike glycoproteins once they get released into your bloodstream? Well, your first line of defense, the T cells, cannot see the spike just floating around. And that fact has been repeatedly drilled into you. What happens is antigen-presenting cells like macrophages and dendritic cells will chop the spike protein up into smaller protein pieces called peptides. And that is what the T cell sees. It never gets to see the whole spike. So some naive T helper cells will match to this new man-made protein peptide that just kind of showed up out of the universe due to the VDJ recombination that we talked about. It is different than what may have been remembered from natural infections. So these new ones will get cloned from memory, but they are remembering the wrong thing. They are remembering what was created from the shot, not what exists in nature. There will also be virgin B cells that have receptors that will match the entire spike created by the shot. These B cells get autoactivated without T cell help and can turn into plasma cells that crank out suboptimal antibodies that will strongly attach to the spike from the shot, but not strongly to the spike that's on the virus because it's a different shape. Therefore, infections of the wild virus will happen after people get these shots. There is no T cell protection of infection, nor are there proper antibodies to neutralize the virus when you do get infected. In fact, it can make the infection worse, and that is called antibody-dependent enhancement, and here is how that works. So this image is from a recent article titled Non-Neutralizing Antibodies that appeared in International Immunopharmacology Magazine in September of 2022.
I'm going to hold it right there and let all of you take a look at this. This gets a little bit complicated. There's an A, B, C column, and you can follow it. But the most important thing is to understand that these lipid nanoparticles are very toxic in and of themselves. They cover the instructions, which ultimately lead in the production of spike protein. So when you see an LNP, you can think of it as a spike protein, which is the end. It's the end game. It's the end result of that lipid nanoparticle. He did a pretty good job of laying this out. Anything you want to add to that?
Oh, I think he did a fantastic job. It's not an easy concept to explain.
No.
But he's done a good job, and he's very accurate. You know, what we don't know still to this day is what happens to these cationic lipids, these positively charged, synthetic, toxic lipids. How does the cell dispose of them?
Or does it?
And I've heard, some estimates that they persist in the body for about 3 months, and then they eventually leave and make their way into the, you know, municipal sewer system or your septic tank. But what becomes of them in the environment is still a concern because they're that toxic. Now, are they less toxic after they've been metabolized by a human or unchanged? I don't know that we know that. But for the entire time they're in the body, which is, best guess, 3 months, they are toxic and they are doing damage. So, as I said before, you know, the lipid nanoparticle all by itself has the potential to induce cancer.
Absolutely. But it's oncogenic by nature. They designed it to do this. And that's not the only means by which cancer can be created in the body. There are others. There's so much damage done by this thing. It's just really incredible. It is the most violently dangerous, deadly thing that humankind, if humankind did it all, and I have my questions, has ever created and released. And they've injected over 6 billion people with it, close to 7, according to some estimates. We don't know. But there's just a sense out there that there's a growing cascade of people who are getting sicker. More and more reports of people with turbo cancers that they had no idea they had, 1 week from diagnosis to death. That's awfully damn fast.
I know.
Maybe a month. I mean, it's staggering to think about how you can carry on. Credit the body for covering up terrible problems. You can carry on and feel relatively normal, and yet you're a week away from death from cancer. This is not normal. No chance.
Well, again, when you downregulate or turn off or disable parts of the immune system that
key
are responsible
parts.
For surveilling and identifying, tagging, and eliminating cancerous cells, viruses, you don't have
soldiers.
Symptoms. The most you might feel,
right?
The most you may feel is a vague sense of fatigue, maybe some aches and pains. You know, you don't feel like yourself, but there's no other indication that you could be seriously ill.
That's pretty scary. And you go into a doctor and you're really not suffering any acute symptoms or those syndromes, and yet you're a week away from being dead?
How many
wild.
Times did Nurse Ann tell us about these patients that would present in the emergency room or
yes.
clinic or whatever for various ailments? And in the course of being evaluated and worked up, that's when they find these cancers.
And they weren't even looking for them in the beginning.
Right, right.
I hope this doesn't scare people needlessly, but you need to be aware of what's happening out there.
Mm.
And the other side, the unfortunate side of this coin, is that you go to a doctor for help, and the damn doctors, in many cases, don't know what the hell they're doing, or they make mistakes. And there's so many things to look for. I'm not knocking all of them. It's a very difficult situation now. See, they're seeing damage from these spike proteins and the liquid nanoparticles and other things as well that they've never seen before. This is new. All of these profiles are they're seemingly different, and there's no uniformity for it. It can spread out all over the map, and all of a sudden you've got numbers of symptoms, and then you have the other side of the symptom problem, which is there are only so many symptoms to go around. Think about it.
That's right. That's right.
It's really crazy. So one of the first things to go, as Erica said, is your anti-tumor potential in your body. Your anti-tumor soldiers, P53, BRCA1, is it?
Yeah.
The other one? They're gone. And so what do you have? You have no innate natural defense against cancer that will explode. That's why they call it turbo cancer. There's nothing to knock it down. And by the time they work you up, and it takes, what the lady from Moderna say, when they get to design at some point in the future personal anti-cancer regimens for people to take and to be given, it can be 45 days to get that done. She thought that was really a short period of time. But how many of these turbo cancer patients are gone in less than that? Lots of them.
Yeah.
And remember, we're not hearing these deaths reported anymore at all.
No.
The mainstream media is not doing nothing. And now the CDC 2 months ago quit taking reports on adverse reactions. Well, death is an adverse reaction. So is cancer. So are all the other things. So they're not tracking any of this. They don't want to. And they have, when somebody dies, a doctor has to fill out a death certificate or a county coroner. And they have literally a wheelbarrow full of causes of death that they can put in the space.
Yeah. They sure do. And because this takes somebody out in so many different ways. I mean, I've heard it called the Swiss Army knife of death, and it really is true. It seems if you have some advantage that can evade one side of it, it'll get you some other way.
Remember back in the beginning when we were doing these programs, I used to just marvel at the sophistication, the number of tentacles that this thing had to reach out and exert anti-life impacts on a living organism. And now we have the story yesterday, I sent it to you, about the racehorses.
That's right.
Dozens and dozens of racehorses. I'm not surprised that
animals are being affected. You know, this stuff is entering the environment, is contaminating the environment. It's a poison. It's a metabolic poison.
Designed to go after, I think, any mammal. Any.
It doesn't distinguish.
No.
We've seen the same presentations in cats and dogs that we see in people. You know, we've got the clotting, particularly the blood disorders in the cats seem to be prevalent, but also neurological symptoms. I don't know how many times I've heard of people saying their dog became lame.
Wow.
You know, at some point following, not long after their injections. So they have trouble walking, they're dragging their hind legs around, and nobody can figure out why, and then they, in some cases, end up putting the animal to sleep.
The owner's injections.
Yeah, yes. Yes, Shedding. Living in a vaxxed household.
Transmitting to your loving and beloved pets.
And they have no idea that they're doing this to their pets. I know they wouldn't knowingly do it, but they don't have a clue that they are shedding noxious, potentially lethal material. They've been, you know, genetically modified to do this.
Well, Satan is real. Evil is real. Don't forget that. There's no kindness in any of this. It is the most
ruthless,
hideous, horrible evil that you could possibly conjure up, in my view. Maybe there's something worse, but God help us, I can't think of any. This is awful. We see it all the time, and I'm speaking for both of us. We both think that this thing is beginning to get ready to boil over the sides of the pot. It's percolating and getting hotter. And people are getting sicker, and they don't even notice it. And it can manifest in dozens of different ways. The symptomology is all over the map.
Yeah, and here we go with another shot.
Well, we'll track this as well as we can for you. I think we'll look into calling a Walmart pharmacy just for the heck of it, see what we can find there. Thank you all for being here, and great job. Thanks, partner. Talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
All right, we'll be right back with Hour 3, and we're going to talk to Yoshi next hour about the Prime Minister of Japan going to Fukushima and having himself some fish and chips, so to speak. Be right back.